Diana, the fairy queen, was very sick and was about to die. The whole kingdom of the fairies was in a state of great panic. Queen Diana lay on her bed, her wings drooping, her hands stretched open, her mouth half opened with her eyes closed. She had gotten sick at dusk, while she was dancing by the blue lake, and like a sputtering candle, she suddenly collapsed on the heart of a water lily. A wave of shock and fear grasped the little fairies, and about 20 of them flew to her aid and carried her gently on a water lily to their grotto in the mountain. This sad, slow-moving procession looked eerie under the pale light of the moon. They gently put Diana on a bed of wild violets with her head under the sparkling pearl. The pearl had an odd shape. It looked like a huge teardrop from the face of the moon. It was the fairy's most precious treasure, because of its magical powers. It seemed to send out warm and strong rays of light through the whole room, but the glazed eyes of the queen no longer noticed the beautiful gem. Later that night, when the wind began to shake its violet scarf, some of the fairies carried their queen outdoors, laying her on the scarlet velvet of a huge iris. Then they danced around her and sang soothing lullabies, hoping to make her feel better. Diana smiled, and with trembling lips she murmured in a faint voice, "Thank you." This little smile comforted the fairies and gave them hope that she might recover. What the fairies did not understand was that behind Diana's sad smile, there was a will to live, but her weak heart was beating more and more slowly. Before long the queen grew so weak that even the light of the moon would bother her. She was forced to go inside. From that night on, the little fairies stopped dancing. They just sat quietly in the grotto, their eyes fixed anxiously on the queen, as she lay on her bed, silent and without a stir. When the grasshoppers began to sing, and the frogs filled the marsh with their croaking, the wings of the fairy queen quivered a bit and her long silky eyelashes fluttered above her deep blue eyes. The fairies understood at once that the noise was bothering Diana. So they flew quickly to the grasshoppers and frogs and told them, "Ladies, we beg of you to play your music more softly, so it doesn't disturb our queen. She is very sick, you know, and might even die." Both the grasshoppers and the frogs stopped their singing. They were moved by this sad news, but the word flattered to have been called ladies and delighted that the fairies had spoken of their music. "We'll come back later to see how the queen is doing," they softly whispered. By nightfall, the whole neighborhood had heard that Queen Diana was sick. The frogs had told the robins had told the squirrels, and the squirrels in turn had told everyone else in the wood. The following night a colorful parade of yellow and pink butterflies, of silvery moths, bright fireflies, green frogs, brown bats, soft fuzzy squirrels and other critters moved slowly along the rocky road leading to the fairy's kingdom. They reached the small entrance to the cave. A fairy on guard duty stood in the doorway blocking their way. "What do you want?" she said in a kind way. "We want to see your queen, please, even if it's for a short while." "We brought her some medicine," they all said together. "Please wait a minute," said the fairy. "I don't know if the queen can see anyone tonight. She is still very sick. But stay here while I go and ask if you can't come in," she continued. A few minutes later she came back, and with a sad tone in her voice she told them, My fairy sisters would like to thank you for your kindness. But Queen Diana is so weak that we must make sure that she doesn't get worse, so she cannot have any visitors. We are sorry. However, if you want to walk quietly by her bedroom door, you can get a glimpse of her as she is resting on her bed. Slowly, the colorful procession filed by the queen's door. The animals sense the great sadness. As each one passed by the door, he dropped a grain or some spice on the floor. Grains and spices are excellent medicine for the animals of the forest, but certainly not for fairies. The cute mouth of a fairy is too small for that. Thank you for coming, and for bringing some of your own medicine, said the fairy on guard duty. When the last visitor had gone, silence fell once again upon the cave, and the fairy on guard duty began to think about what to do for her queen. Her head ached with all sorts of ideas. She was a frail little fairy with big, beautiful, dreamy eyes, and small wings that resembled delicate lace dusted with gold. Her name was Sylvette. She was graceful and very bright. She had a heart of gold, which quivered like a harp at the least bit of emotion. Because Sylvette was so sensitive, she suffered much more deeply than her other sisters, and Queen Diana's illness just about broke her heart. While the little fairy was deep in thoughts, the fullness of the moon suddenly appeared from behind a wisp of clouds. The face of the star seemed to smile at her. Suddenly Sylvette had a brilliant idea. Why not ask the moon to help? Yes, Madam Moon, who has seen so many things during her long lifetime, would probably know of a cure for her queen. Sylvette stood up and raised her hands, and said, O silvery moon, way up in the sky, please give us a tune that will fly and bring from the heavens the answer soon. She waited for the answer, anxious and trembling. The moon sighed, and answered in a soft voice, I regret, O Sylvette, I know no cure yet. Sylvette's little hands dropped down with disappointment, and she said out loud, Thank you just the same. I should ask the North Star to help. Who knows, maybe he will know of a cure. Again she raised her voice into the deep stillness of the night and said, So clear and bright and brilliant star, we know who and where you are, sparkling up there from ancient star, come help and cure own queen's heart. Then the North Star spoke in a deep and solemn voice, Although to you my light I send with beams and pulse that do not bend, I only shine with hope above that offers strength for fairy love. The last ray of hope fainted away from the Sylvette's heart. She slumped down on a mossy rock, hiding her face with her wings, and she began to cry. At that very moment the wind appeared very quietly, so quietly that it sounded as if he was walking in velvet slippers. He was an old man, but young at heart. He loved Sylvette, and often played tricks on her. He had a great sense of humor, however he had the bad habit of surprising her from behind, and blowing air down her neck. Then he would laugh at his own pranks. Once again, he wanted to surprise her, having just come back from the North Pole. When he first saw her he thought she was sleeping, so he could catch her by surprise. He tousled her hair to tickle her. Sylvette had a big curl on top of her head in shape of a question mark, which he was fond of playing with it. He often made it dance on her forehead. Peek-a-boo, Sylvette, he said. Normally Sylvette welcomed his teasing with an impish giggle, But this time, her eyes flooded with tears and she began to cry. He wanted him to comfort her and not tease her. The wind was shocked when he saw her face. Was this his little carefree butterfly, his happy little flower? "My child, oh my little child," murmured the wind, with tears in his eyes. "My old dad," she stuttered. The wind was not her real father, but she had called him dad ever since the night he told her how lonely he was and how he longed to have a friend. Sylveth's heart was so moved by this confession that she asked him right then and there if he wanted to be her father. She would always love him and keep him company, so he would never be lonely again. That made him so happy that he danced and chatted with her all night long. During the next 10 days he sang his happiness down all the chimneys of houses, and all throughout the trees of the forests. But now he was concerned. "What's wrong with you, my little Sylveth? How can your old father help you and comfort you?" he asked the little fairy as he gently stroked her back and kissed her hair. "Oh, father, our queen is so sick, and no one knows what to do with her, no one, not even the moon, nor the North Star. I am afraid that Queen Diana will die." "I am sorry to hear this," said the wind. "That's very sad." For a long time he was quiet, then finally he said, "We must find the best doctor to treat her." Suddenly, he bounced up with such strength that even the stars were stunned, and all the leaves on the ground were carried away in the dizzying waltz. "I have a great idea, my child, I have a great idea," he repeated with feeling. He sat down next to Sylveth and told her of his plan. "Listen to me," he said. "In the country where the sun sets, there is a very tall mountain all covered with wild trees. Well, one day when I was roaming through that forest, I discovered some tiny people, a tiny king and his tiny subjects, who were so small that I could have blown them up in the air like a bag of feathers. They say that these little dwarves are highly educated, and have made many discoveries. They hold the secrets for cures to all the world's diseases. Let's go ask them for their help." Sylveth's face lit up, and she got up from her rock, and shouted, "Of course! Let's go! Take me there now, please, but give me a few minutes so I can tell the other fairies about this trip. I'll pack a bag and then I'll be ready." Sylveth flew back into the cave. She told the fairy's family that the wind was taking her to the kingdom of the tiny people who knew how to cure all diseases. The good news ran quickly throughout the little fairy kingdom. Her sisters and brothers all agreed that she should leave as soon as possible, and bring back a remedy for the queen. They all wanted to help Sylveth to get her ready for the trip, and they gave her advices, warning her of all possible dangers. They gave her a coat made of silvery fleece to keep her warm. Before she left, Sylveth went to say goodbye to her sick queen and kissed her pale hands. She whispered to her, "I am going on a trip to bring you back your health, my queen." A flash of hope came to the queen's eyes, as she managed a faint smile. It seemed to say thank you. Sylveth, excited and happy as a lark, ran into the arms of the wind, who was patiently waiting for her. She sang to him, "Oh, strong wind, hold me tight, close to you I know no fright. Keep on blowing with all your might that our queen's illness may take flight." The wind propped Sylveth on his back. Then, unfolding his gigantic great wings, and vaulted like an arrow in the air. The trip made her dizzy, as they moved swiftly into the night. The cities, the villages, the forests, and the pastures below them resembled toys left behind on an immense carpet. The rivers seemed like silver threads woven in dark black hair. The moon, which knew the purpose of their trip, showed them the way with her bright light. The stars also sent their brightest rays to help out. The wind's wings whistled as they flapped back and forward. The sudden rush of air woke up people below by surprise. They wondered why the wind howled in their chimney with such clash. Why such a windy storm? They shouted. At the time when the stars begin to fade away in the sky, Sylvette could see an enormous mountain far away in the horizon, covered by dense woods. As they got closer and closer to the mountain, the wind became more and more excited. "We are here, my little one," he exclaimed. Sylvette was out of breath, her red cheeks burning from their journey. "Wow, we have traveled really fast," she said. "Now that we are here, how can we ever find these tiny people in such large mountain?" "I am a little embarrassed," said the wind, "because I can't remember the exact place where these tiny elves live. Let's ask this old tree, he certainly would know." Sylvette ran over to the big oak tree and perched herself on one of its branches. It was an enormous tree. It would have taken hundreds of fairies holding hands together to go around its trunk, she thought. "Dear old and wise tree," began Sylvette, with a timid voice, "would you tell us where the little elves live? The ones who are so smart and know all life's secrets and cures." The tree didn't budge. He seemed not to have heard a thing she said. Suddenly, a multitude of birds woke up from their slumber and a smart and talkative hummingbird started to chirp. "You must speak louder. The old tree is hard of hearing," he said to her. "That's true," shouted all the other birds in chorus. "Thank you," said Sylvette. She repeated her question again, a little louder this time. "He is very hard of hearing," belted the pigeon. "I really cannot scream any louder," said Sylvette. She turned and looked at her friend the wind, who was laughing at her again. "Just a minute, I'll give you a hand," he said. With a flap of his wing, he shook a branch of the tree, waking the old giant. The tree snorted and grumbled, waking up from a very deep slumber. "You fool, how you dare wake me up by shaking me like that," the tree mumbled. "You have a visitor," explained the wind. "It's a fairy, who has come to ask you something," he continued. "What did you say? A fairy? Where is she?" "I don't see anyone here," said the startled tree. Now all the birds cooped together and pointed to Sylvette with their beaks. Sylvette was embarrassed to have caused such a commotion. The tree tried hard to focus on her with both eyes, and everyone became quiet. The wind took it all in and smiled. "I have never seen such an exquisite creature like this before," the tree exclaimed. "What did you want to ask me, little fairy?" he continued. "Mr. Tree," Sylvette said politely, "do you know where the little elves who possess magic power live? I am told that they live around here." "Hum, my little child, how would I